So here we are in this fourth month, and I don't think it is random that in April we're talking about rapture, in March we were talking about joy, in February we were talking about faith. I don't think that's random. I think the Buddha was serious about changing our disposition on how we see the world and how we see life in general. And we live in a culture that is overwhelmingly pessimistic. I mean, all we do all day long is whine and complain, constantly, all day long. There's something to be whined about, something to be complained about. And we get trapped in that whining and complaining. In fact, some of my friends, I don't whine enough for them. So I used to be good with them, but now they're like, oh, Tuareg, you're too zen. You just don't, you're not keeping it real. You're not in the world. I can't believe it. I tell them, do you have any idea how much joy goes on in the world? I'm going to give you an example, how simple this is. So I moved into a big house, and now I don't live in an apartment. And I used to live in an apartment. And so when you live in an apartment, you kind of get to know your neighbors. And you don't really have to worry about security and things like that because the apartment door is the security. But now that I live in this house, I have to actually deal with security of that house. And so I got the security system. So it's sort of like I got a house from my little tiny studio, and now there's all these things I have to do. And so my inclination, because I am an aversive type person, is to grumble about everything that's going on. Everything I have to do, oh, why this? I got to do that. Now I got to do this. And that's my inclination. And for years, I lived out of that inclination. But I look for joy all the time. Any kind of opportunity, I can find it. And so one morning, this was just a few days ago, maybe, 4 days ago, I turned on the camera to my house. I was in San Francisco, at Spirit Rock. So right outside of San Francisco, I'm at Spirit Rock. And I turned on the camera to the house so I could hear the birds, because for some reason this house is on the bird pathway. And so I was just going to listen to the birds as they were calling and singing. And next thing I know, there's a bird at Spirit Rock calling back to these birds. It was so beautiful. So I turned on the mic to my little app, right? And these birds were calling back and forth to each other. I wondered if they know that one is in California and one is in Washington. And do they have accents? I mean, do they know? Can you tell? I don't know. But they were having this conversation back and forth. What a world to be sitting there actually listening to birds call back and forth to each other on a cell phone app. That is the world we live in. Yes, we do live in a world where there's war and craziness going on, but that is not the only thing that's going on. And I think the Buddha was really trying to press the point to not get trapped in this cultural kind of habitual underlying tendency towards greed or hatred or that aversion and delusion, and begin to see that in any given moment, there is this possibility of great joy. But it will not show up if we don't begin to shift our view, to shift our understanding. And that's why I think that, yeah, put this transcendental co-arising in perspective. Because where we are, even though we're going to spread this out for a whole year, it actually happens this quick. We're just slowing it down, really slow. So in the moment that this rapture and joy is arising, faith is arising, we're at the beginning. So if we're at the beginning, what is it that we're connected to, Dukkha? We are connected to some difficulty, something we really want that's leaving us, something that we don't want is coming our way. That's where we are when we have the possibility of liberation. We are not in a happy time. That's what I want you to hear. So if you're looking for the happy time, so I'll be happy, that is unreliable. It's unreliable, and it is what our ordinary mind uses to gauge joy and rapture. That's what the ordinary mind uses. Good things have happened to me, therefore I can be happy. And if good things aren't happening to me, I can't be happy. That is not the way Dhamma works. It is almost the opposite. What I like is Sharon Salzberg's use of the word, it's radical. What you are doing is radical. So in the midst of some difficulty, instead of you falling into the bewilderment of that difficulty or the grasping, trying to keep some good thing from leaving you, you begin to shift your view towards, is it possible that there's some other way to be with this? And that initial faith is what gets you to turn towards the dukkha. That's what you're turning towards, not towards the solution. You don't need a solution. You need to understand what's happening here, because dukkha, this difficulty, I hate that we call that word dukkha. We've translated it to suffering because no one wants to turn towards suffering. But if we had translated it as opportunity, then everyone would want to say, oh, this is my opportunity. Let me turn towards and see what's going on. But we think of it as suffering. And in that translation, it's very hard to convince our minds to turn towards that difficulty. But in the midst of that difficulty is exactly where release is. That is where liberation is. It's not in the other side of it. And so this transcendental co-arising is cultivating a habit energy that turns towards our dukkha, turns towards our uneasiness, our dissatisfaction, our wishing it was not this. We turn towards that and begin to investigate why we wish it was not that. This turning towards is what sparks joy, right? Because, I mean, I know I quote this moment in Buddha's life so much. I can't help it because I can't, I am still stunned that he did this. So in his moment, when all is lost, it's all messed up, right? He left home. and thinking he was going to get it together. He was going to go out there and he's going to find his way to end suffering. And all he got was, no, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. That's not it. So he's in his moment of actually being trapped. Nothing he has done has worked. Nothing he has done has worked. Nothing we have done has worked to get our suffering, for us to stop suffering. So all these efforts, we just keep trying and trying and trying, and nothing works. So here he is dying, and I think we have to put a pin in it. It's so much of a failure that he's actually dying, and he's going to be reborn and suffer again next time. So this is, it's like, really put a pin in it. You left your family, you left money, all this refined capacity, and here you are laying under a tree, dying. And that's it. This is it. And then when he had this memory of childhood, think about it. When we're meditating and we have a memory of some pleasant moment, there's almost a yearning for that. Like we almost wish we were there, not here, there. And the Buddha did not do that. He didn't tumble into regret. He didn't tumble into this kind of, oh, woe is me, self-pity. He didn't tumble into any of that. He had a sense, wait a minute, what is going on there? I was still. He's thinking about when he was a kid and he was in samadhi, and yet he was aware of everything going on. So he has this moment where he's like, what is that? And in the discourse, he said that what his response was, might there be another way? Can you hear the faith in that? The uplift in that? There's actually got to be a bit of joy. Like, wait a minute. Maybe there's another way. Here you are at the end, pretty much. I mean, there's a sutta where the devas were betting on whether or not he was dead or not. So we're really at the end here. And yet, he doesn't wallow in it. He turns towards opportunity. Do you see why I don't think suffering is the right word? It's opportunity. He turns that way and says, let me consider this. And then he realized that in his current state of weakness, he would never be able to practice this way, whatever this is. And so he had to start eating in order for him to get his strength so he could practice it. And that's what he said to himself. I'm going to have to eat so I can get my strength and I can practice this. And let's investigate this further. So now, all his friends leave him because he's eating. So somehow or another, I guess if he had just died, that would have been the way they were dealing with the witches. If you don't die, then you are not. Oh, if you die, you're not a witch. If you don't die, then you are. Somehow that just didn't work right. But somehow his friends get mad at him because he starts eating. So now you got to get this, because this is where we all have to go, everyone. He has to practice something he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know how to do it. He has an idea that there is some way that we can have samadhi even in the midst of things. So he has that kind of understanding. But he has to figure out, practice, and find his way to that. You need joy and rapture to do that. You need joy and rapture. Not joy and rapture because everything is going great. Joy and rapture in the practice, in the idea that this is something you get to practice with. This is not a bad thing. It's your opportunity to actually practice with it so that you could really begin to see the gift of all of this. There's nothing in the practice that's going to hurt you. But not doing the practice, we're going to keep stumbling into the same old world over and over and over and over and over. So in that, I cannot think of a more joyous moment than that. And I cannot think of a more rapturous moment than that. That he actually had to enjoy eating for the sake of being able to practice with this thing that he doesn't even know what it is. No more teachers. So there's no teachers here. Whatever he was going to learn was outside of anything any teacher could tell him, because all the teachers had told him everything they could tell him. And every one of us in this room, we come to this moment over and over and over. You have some moment of anxiety, and you really don't want that anxiety. It does not feel okay. And we want it to go away. And so instead of turning towards that anxiety and seeing if you can look at it in a different understanding, we fight it to try to make it go away. And sometimes we make it go away. Ooh, thank God that anxiety went away. And we are all happy, like, oh, I feel so much better. Whew, feel so much better. That's it. That's what I have to do every time. But you do know the anxiety is coming back. It's like a boomerang. You throw it, get rid of it. You can't throw it again. Get rid of it. I don't want it. That's what happens. And that's what we get stuck in. In the moment, we think the freedom is getting rid of that thing I don't like. And we got to redesign, reconfigure what we think of practice. And practice is this stopping and this opportunity to actually use this moment as a moment of awakening. So rapture, the joy, actually leads to rapture. Rapture is you can think of it as two ways, like a momentary rapture and sustained rapture. I think of momentary rapture as a rapture we can get access to as a householder. You know, you have to actually be in a sustained practice in order to get in touch with the momentary rapture, the sustained rapture. But doesn't mean that as a householder, we don't have access to the sustained rapture, but it's going to take more than a 15, 20 minute sit. It's going to take a sustained connection to the present moment. And the more you can sustain your connection to the present moment, then the more you can cultivate this kind of sustained rapture. So it's called rapture, and it's very strange because rapture, when I looked it up earlier this month, is like, you know, some kind of overwhelming experience of emotion. And, you know, we usually associate it with something wonderful happening. We feel pleasant and wonderful. And that ecstasy that comes from that is usually connected to something good happening to us. That's why we have the a kind of a rapturous energy. It's because something good has happened. And we're so like falling in love, like being connected. Something happens. I'm so happy. It's almost like the joy itself is coming from this pleasurable thing that has happened. This is not the rapture of Dhamma. The rapture of Dhamma, the way I would think of it is, you have the same joyous, pleasurable experience just because you're in the present moment. So just because I was there in that present moment watching, listening to those birds talk to each other, just that, and I was having this rapturous experience. I could not believe it. I could not believe it. I could have sat there with that phone all morning and had to get ready to go teach, but wow, I was so just caught in the moment of just hearing it. And there's such a pleasurable feeling that the body actually can relax and the mind can relax. So if you are sitting in meditation, or even if you're in your ordinary life and you decide you're going to turn towards your opportunity to be with this aversion, but you are like, okay, I'm ready to be with it. Okay, what do we got to do to deal with this aversion? This is my opportunity. That is not going to give rise to rapture. Rapture, the proximate cause of it is joy. It's the joy before the rapture. So the way you could think of it is the mind has this mental joy and it kind of relaxes the mind, which allows the body to relax. And the rapture is a felt sense pleasure in the body and in our daily practice. You can be kind of giddish with just whatever's happening. I have students that they will come to me and they will say, Tori, I've just been really feeling a lot of, you know, difficulty and struggle. And I'm like, oh, good. What have you noticed about that? Let's talk about that. And they're always looking at me like, did you hear what I said? I said I have difficulty and struggle. And I'm like, good, let's think about that. Because the only time we can understand difficulty is when difficulty is present. Because I could sit and talk about difficulty when I'm in a real relaxed, non-difficult state. But that's not really difficulty. That's just a memory of when it was difficult, but that's not real. When you're in a moment of difficulty, that's the only time you can actually practice with it. That's the only time that you could actually learn something about difficulty. It was the only time I could have the birds talk to each other. It was just that one moment when the birds were both, they both have to be able to talk to each other. And I have to be there with my cell phone and happen to turn it on. This, when you can relax the mind and have this joy about the opportunity that you get to practice with something, it's going against the grain. It's might there be another way? Because it's certainly not any of the ways we've learned. We've always learned to fix things that are difficult or, you know, make it work. Nobody Even your mind is like, we're going to just sit with this? There's something's wrong with that. Something's wrong with that practice. We certainly shouldn't be sitting with this. So that's why you need the uplift in the mind, the joy in the mind, so that you're not trying to force the mind to sit with some pain that you really can't bear. If you can't bear it, then do whatever you need to do to ease it and wait until you're ready to give it a good try and see if you can give it a look. Because you have to have an open-hearted kind of mind state that you want to look at this a little deeper. And that's that joy. It doesn't have to be elation. It's just this smile, this uplift of wanting to actually investigate this. And then the rapture is a relaxed body. Samadhi is where we're going after this. We're going to go into the calm and tranquility. And just so you know, because you have to understand why the Buddha started. I mean, let me just correct that so you don't get a misunderstanding. The Buddha didn't create transcendental co-arising, like somebody figures out the retirement plan. Somebody figures out some kind of woo-woo workshop that you can take and it'll help you de-stress your life, declutter your life. He didn't figure something out and work it out in his mind and put it together and say, oh, we could do this and then this. Oh, wait, this should come before that. He didn't do that. He stumbled upon the wisdom of a Buddha that already existed, but had been covered over and lost by the world because no one practiced it. And he stumbled upon what was already present, but unknown. So there is a reason why faith, joy, and rapture are the fundamental beginning of a transcendental kind of co-dependent arising. It's called dependent arising because everything is dependent upon this flow happening the way it happens. And it leads to liberation. It does not lead to dukkha. It leads away from dukkha into liberation. And it is dependent upon the flow itself. That flow is natural. It is lawful. It is not something Buddha made up. It is the nature of a liberated mind. So when you're trying to liberate the mind or the heart, citta, the heart mind, you have to start with joy and rapture. You have to. Because where you're going and where we're going to get to round about November, October, is dispassion and disenchantment. Okay, so think about it for a moment. If you come into the practice transcendental in an averse, negative, complaining state, by the time you get to disenchantment and dispassion, it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be good. There's no way you could liberate the mind. But we have to get to disenchantment. And we have to begin to get to dispassion so we can let some of these habitual patterns go. We will not let them go if we're still enchanted with them. We will not let them go if we still have all this passion around, it's going to work this time. So in order for us to actually let some of this habit energy go, we have to get through this process of disenchantment and dispassion. And where we are now is the on-ramp. So when you go on the freeway and you're on the on-ramp, don't you just hate it? The people that do like 25 and they're about to get on a freeway that's doing 65, or in my case, I'm probably doing 80, 75 at least. Don't come in and try that. Go slow. Wait for me. It's not going to happen. You are going to have to come in behind me. So that kind of on-ramp that we're doing, that's what this joy is. It's doing an on-ramp so that you build up enough desire, this liberative desire, a dhammachanda is what it is. It's this desire to liberate the mind. You get so into it that you are willing to go against your practice, like the Jains, and the Buddha was willing to eat. Because he was a Jain practitioner, and he was a staunch Jain practitioner. So the fact that he would go against that practice and eat meant he had to have enough dhammachanda to have him moving in a direction that would have him going completely a different way. Reconsidering the whole landscape, something completely different than what I thought. And that is what we're doing in these early months, is we are in the on-ramp, speeding up towards having the capacity to actually let go of some of these habits. So this rapture is the body has to feel good about what it's doing. I remember, many of you know, I had a lot of anxiety, and that anxiety was no joke. 3 years I had that anxiety. Jesus, I used to think I was going to sit in Seattle Insight. We would be in Soto. We were at St. Mark's. I thought I was going to keel over and die and have a heart attack, and nobody would even care. They would all be sitting there meditating, and I was dead on the floor because I'm having a heart attack. I just did not understand what was happening. And it was so intense that sometimes, oh my God, I thought I was having literally a heart attack. And so I tried all these things to make this anxiety go away, to stop it. I'd ask teachers and try to pretend like, yes, I'm working with anxiety, and I was just wondering if you have any tips, you know. I really want to say, what do you do to make it go away? But you can't say that, because you'll say, oh, no, you're not supposed to make it go away. So I try to come up with language that would go all around Italy, but really I want you to tell me, how do I make this anxiety go away? Because it does not feel like it should be this way. And it was not until I just finally, I don't even know how I came to it. I just decided I'm going to be the queen of anxiety. And people are going to come from far and wide and say, how did you do it? How do you sit with anxiety? And I would say, this is how I sit with anxiety. And I no longer needed that anxiety to go away. I was going to be the greatest meditator with anxiety. And what I did not realize at the time was that is this joy in the mind, this uplift, this possibility that this anxiety was going to be my liberative path. And then as I sat there with the anxiety, because I was so wrapped into the notion of trying to figure out what was happening. What happens when anxiety happens? And I would just get still and just sit there, and the body would be shaking, and I could feel the tightening and the tensing. I'd say, Tori, just relax. You need to know these things about anxiety if you're going to answer people's questions. So sit with it. Be still. It's okay. We just have to be with it as long as it's here. And eventually, since I'm no longer trying to fix the anxiety itself, the body relaxed and let go. And I could begin to see how I was tightening my own body, generating that anxiety. And that the more I relaxed, the more the body just moved energy through, and that was the end of it. Just this turning towards it changed the whole understanding with it. And the body's natural tendency towards relaxation happened. This rapture is a joyous, it is a felt sense, pleasurable experience. The difficulty with rapture, though, especially with sustained rapture, is that if you get attached to that joyous, warm, beautiful feeling, and you like it, so now you want it to stay all the time. It does stay a while, but it can start grating on your nerves, kind of like it's a little bit too much. Just slow it down. And then it can actually get painful, and you want it to stop. And you're almost needing the calm and tranquility that comes afterwards. So this joy, this rapture in the body, it's called piti when you're in that meditative state. We have to balance this piti, this energy of pleasurable feelings in the body. So you'll sit and stay there and watch. We have to balance it with the calm that comes after. In our ordinary householder life, we have to balance that same kind of interest in whatever's happening. So when we're in our householder life, I think of it as rapt attention. Like you're interested in the moment and you feel relaxed and you feel good about beginning to investigate this moment, just the way it is. And it's kind of a rapt attention. It's rapt even when it's in the sustained kind of meditative state. It's a rapt attention around a neutral object. And you're so connected to that neutral object that your whole body feels pleasurable and you don't want to do anything else but just sit here with the breath. And it feels like you could sit with the breath forever. And that, to get to that sustained kind of pleasurable state where you can stay right there, you can't have a lot of aversion in the mind. You have to have a mind that's looking forward to sitting and meditating yet again and just feeling the breath, that has to be the only kind of thing that you want to do. And so in our ordinary householder lives, I've always made this similar kind of experience that when you're having that frustrating moment or that irritating moment or that moment where, you know, you're nervous or worried or, you know, you come out and see the car is messed up because somebody hit it and then didn't even leave a note. And now you got to deal with that. Those kinds of moments, you want to have a rapt attention in how you feel. You want to get interested in what's actually happening, and how can your practice support you with this? How can I practice with this in such a way that I can be with it and learn something about the Dhamma? Because the Dhamma is in everything. So if you're not seeing the Dhamma, then you're not present. It's everywhere. And so whatever you can do to hone your attention into this, so I'll stay with it. Anyway, that's where we'll talk next week. We'll do we'll have a little bit of a summary. It's not really a summary because I don't bring any notes, and so I don't know what I'm gonna say next week. We'll have some kind of thing next week. And then we'll do a discussion with each other and talk to each other about, you know, your thoughts about it, your understandings. And it's important for us to talk about Dhamma. It's important for us to talk about these ideas, not because we have to know the right answer, unless you're an enlightened being. And as far as I know, nobody in this room is an enlightened being. Nobody online is an enlightened being. So since none of us are enlightened beings, none of us is going to have the right answer. So it's one of those things where the talking to each other must be about something else. And it is. It's about hearing possibility outside of your current understanding. And then when you begin to hear what someone else says about their understanding, it begins to add and inform yours. So those talk nights are, I mean, those discussion nights are really important. But I think that's enough reflection. I hope I've gotten you kind of like stirred up and like, maybe I'm going to try this when I go home this week, see what happens. And then next week you can come back and say, nope, I was still grumbling. It's like, okay. It's going to take a little bit. But at least you turned towards it and, you know, took a moment. You just keep doing that and eventually the mind will catch on. So let's just sit for a moment and let the words just kind of drift away. We'll see if there's any questions that anybody might have. Comments. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate your attention. Let's see if there's anybody that has anything you want to talk about or bring up or stirred anything. Carla, go ahead.
Thanks, Larry. I want to share an anecdote and then I also have a question.
Sure. So
started with Rapture this month, I had the idea that this just doesn't apply to householder life. And I was like, oh, I'm not even sure what I'm going to get this month. Now, you pointed to a number of things, but I'm suddenly remembering an experience I had, and I actually wonder if it was kind of a Rapture experience in a mundane way. Because it sounds like part of Rapture is it's a natural progression. It's almost like a natural nervous system reaction to calming of the mind. And so last year, I had many, many months of very, very heightened anxiety, lots and lots of anxiety in the body and the mind. And at some point where stuff had sort of resolved already in my life, but the anxiety was still stuck in my body. And I went and I got a massage. And so, of course, I'm relaxing during the massage. I'm letting go of all of the thinking about the anxiety. And by the time it was done, I get up and I had just a rush of joy like I had never experienced. You know, of course, I'm always relaxed after a massage. I had never experienced this before. I was like body, mind, and spirit just absolutely joyful. It's like I was back in touch with life, like I had detoxed. And so this feels like it might be similar. I haven't experienced it in meditation, but it was the mind relaxing allowed that energy to move out of the body. And I felt vitality. It was like I was back in touch with life. So I wanted to share that. I don't know.
Let me just ask the question here. When you were having the massage, did you stay present for the massage or did you just go to sleep?
No, I stayed present, very present. Like I was actively trying to breathe with the massage to, you know, to take it in and yeah.
Yeah, I think that would lead me to think, yes, that was a moment of this kind of momentary rapture. That's this overwhelming joy. It's part of the present moment. So even though you had all this tension in the body, you're breathing through it and staying with it is what helped you relax both the mind and the body. And that's what I would think of as a householder. You can have a rapturous feeling. That's what because if you think about it, we skip over the fact that you were present and you were trying to breathe through it and relax through it. You weren't just going in, getting your massage and checking out and expecting, you know, I'm going to be relaxed when I get done. But instead, you were breathing through it in the present moment. That is what, that's practicing. You're practicing with that experience. And yes, I think householders can have rapturous moments of great joy that seem to come out of the blue while we're present with something. So I would call it rapture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm so glad you asked that question. Okay, here's my other question. I've been experiencing in recent months, so after many years of practice, the first time I'm becoming more conscious of, I experience a difficult moment, an unexpected, unpleasant encounter, whatever. And sometimes now my first reaction is actually equanimity. Mm-hmm. And it's that I'm saying, oh, okay, this is dukkha. Let me practice with it. Let me practice equanimity. It's like the first spontaneous response is actually wisdom sometimes. This is new for me. And I'm like, oh, my God. It's almost disorienting. I'm like, wow, why am I not more upset? Why am I not trying to fix this? And then an hour later, maybe a day later, the habitual arguing, fixing, it's like then it's almost like the mind realizes, oh, wait, we're not doing the ego. We're not fighting this.
We better get that ego in there.
Is this common? And can you, like, how can I practice when the ego comes back, like, even more forcefully after I've actually already thought I let go of clinging to that moment?
So the main thing that we're practicing with is you're not doing any of this. That's why it seems so like, who actually is that person that's so equanimous? And when did that happen? I can remember one time asking Rodney, having a similar experience of seeing the benefit of the Brahmaviharas and the metta and the equanimity and compassion and joy, mudita. And I asked him, how do I know I can't make it happen, but how do I do things more you know, do more conduct that'll make it show up, you know? And I'll never, as long as I live, forget what Rodney said in a room of 200 people. He says, well, Tori, some of what you're saying is wisdom and some of it is ignorant. And I just remember, I said, did he just use the word ignorant and me? I just want to make sure I heard that. But what he's saying is the habit mind thinks you have to figure out how to make this happen. But the wisdom mind already knows you don't make it happen. You just practice. So I would say that when the habit mind comes back in a, you know, forceful way, you just practice with that. And sometimes you'll practice with it and you'll feel like you understand it a little better. And oftentimes you're going to practice with it and you feel like you're being defeated by this ferocious mind. But this actually points to why we need dispassion and disenchantment towards the end of the year. Because by the end of the year, you can begin to see that as long as you have some engagement with that habit, it will keep coming back around again and again and again and again. And so some of what's bringing it back around is just your kind of like, not you, so I'm using the word your kind of haphazardly, but it is the nature of us to reassert ourselves when we stumble upon a moment of not being ourselves. And then we got to put ourselves back together again. And eventually you can let that stumbling on not being the you you think you are, and it gets stronger and stronger. And you stop having this need to re-put yourself back together again. But it takes a little while to stop that putting yourself back together again. It's what happens when we leave retreat. You know, we loosen up and we're like so free on the retreat because the container is so safe to do that. And then we have this huge snapback when we get home, trying to be back to who we were and make ourselves be back to who we think we are. But gradually, it's like stretching a rubber band too much over and over and over. Gradually, it won't snap back. Because it can't. It's got all stretchy now. And so, in a way, that's what's going to happen eventually as you keep practicing. So try not to get too caught up in the snapback. You know, it's difficult. It's uncomfortable. It's not you doing it. You're just seeing what the habit mind does. And so you just practice with it as best you're able. And sometimes it'll look good and you'll be like, ooh, that's good. And sometimes it'll look messy and ugly and you're like, oh man, I really lost it on that. We'll just be watching TV and eating ice cream. And that's really, it really is okay if you just give yourself permission to believe it's not you. It's, you're just seeing the nature of habit.
Yeah.
Great.
For sure.
Good.
Feel that.
And that equanimity was habit also. It's the mind cultivating the transcendental co-arising habit. And it shows up also on its own.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Tori.
Yeah. Somebody here in the hall. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Tori. That was a really helpful talk. Thank you. Really helpful. I want to sort of zoom out a little bit. I have a sort of maybe a broader dependent arising question.
Mm-hmm.
Something I thought was really helpful about your example you gave of, you know, you're sitting with the suffering of your own anxiety for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
really long time.
Really long time.
And at some point, you have this moment of, I kind of, I don't know, of faith. You move from that suffering of your anxiety, and you move to faith, and you're like, well, maybe there's a way that I can just sit with this and be the queen of anxiety.
That's right.
That seems like it's a possible thing to do, and that's a moment of faith. And then that leads to the, you know, next link of joy and the next link of rapture, as you describe it.
Right.
But of course, one of the things with dependent arising is that those links can go the other way too.
Dependent origination.
Origination,
yes,
yeah. That you can be sitting with suffering and you can go through down the chain the other direction also.
That's right. That's what I did for many years.
Yeah. So what can you describe a little bit about the difference between what you think unlocks that ability to sort of move up through the transcendent dependent arising? What changed in you that allowed you to move up that transcendent dependent arising and not down that dependent origination?
This is exactly what I'm pointing to. The downward move was this notion, this belief that I don't realize I'm believing it, but this belief that there's something wrong with anxiety. And if I have it, I'm doing something wrong. And I need to learn how to fix it. I need to learn the right way to do it, because if I were doing it right, I wouldn't be having this anxiety. So that spiraling down into what the Buddha called, in the moment of dukkha, you will have bewilderment or a noble search. So the bewilderment is getting caught up in trying to get rid of it or fix it or change it, because it shouldn't be this way. What changed was this giving up of trying to fix it. I gave up. I tried everything. And my faith was, okay, this is the way it's going to be. There's no giving it up. I did not know at the time I turned towards the transcendental that it would go away. I thought I was going to have to practice with anxiety all the time. So can you see how you need this on-ramp? You have to be able to accept the current condition as it is and have a uplift of joy to get interested in wanting to practice with this. It's okay the way it is, and we're not going to try to fix it anymore. That shift from trying to fix it and get it right so that I'm happy to whatever it is, it's okay. That shift is what had to happen. And I think it only happened because I could not fix it, and I kept trying to. I could not get rid of it. Nobody was helping me, and it was just, you know, it's not going to work. So that recognition, coming to terms, I think that's why we have to have the faith. You come to terms with the fact that this is just the way it is. And then you want to get interested in it. So I hope you can see that you need this joy if you're going to let go, right? You need the uplift of getting interested in it the way it is, not I'm going to get interested in it so it will leave, but interested in it staying. It's okay. You have a right to be here too. So we're not going to try to push you away. And that is what is a game changer. What happened to that anxiety is it never was what I thought it was. I thought it was anxiety, what we call anxiety, right? Fearful energy. It was not. It was the body dealing with years of trauma that was all stored in my body, and it has to shift it a little bit and move it and push it a little bit out of here and loosen it up out of this area, and beginning to let go of a lot of old trauma. There's no memories to it anymore. There's nothing happening. I'm sitting in a meditation hall. But that loosening of that energy feels like the same fear I had when I was younger. But there's nothing really to be afraid of. And so I had to actually tell myself, I'm not having a heart attack. So we're okay. So this kind of that joy and that uplift, what it's creating is a kind of a you getting out of the way so the body-mind system can liberate itself. Not you liberate it, but it can liberate itself if we would stop trying to cram ourselves into these notions of what is right and what is wrong and what's the good way to do it and the bad way to do it. That kind of notion is creating all this misunderstanding in the body-mind system. And when you just stop doing all that and just recognize that the practice is doing itself and you just have the opportunity to witness it, then you can begin to see that gradually it will adjust itself. And then I sat down one day in Seattle Insight, fully expecting all the anxiety to come, and it never did. And I felt the flutterings of energy, but it has never been that anxiety anymore since then. And I never made it go away. It just was not anxiety the way I thought it was. It was just purification of the energy. And the more the body got rid of that energy, the stiller I got. It didn't have anything to do with me trying to be still. Do you see? So this, you won't know that unless you are willing to actually be with whatever that experience is and try to use this Zen phrase, don't know mine, and let the experience talk to you. And because we're not used to listening to our bodies, it takes a few times over before we begin to understand. So you have to be willing to be with that discomfort over and over and over and over and trust that whatever that discomfort is, you will understand if you're patient and allow it to be. It will reveal itself. And instead of you trying to mentally figure out what it is and decide what you need to do about it. See the difference? Yeah. One's liberating and one is just more bewilderment. Good. Is Christy?
Hey.
Hey.
So I get when you were working with anxiety in your meditation, outside of meditation, you were still having anxiety.
Yes.
But probably occasionally going, oh, here it is again. Can I soften around it? That's what I want to know. Is that how it worked for you?
Yes. I gave myself a 1 minute moment of awakening, and I had a little egg timer. And when I would start feeling the body shaking, you know, because I was working as a trial lawyer and I'd feel the body shaking and about to panic, thinking I'm going to throw up and die yet again, I would just pull out. First of all, I would go into the holy temple of the toilet. So that is a holy place. And I would go into the bathroom and take my little egg timer and turn it over on the toilet paper stand. And then wait. So 1 minute I have to sit with this anxiety. That's it. 1 minute. And what I didn't understand was that 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. It was teaching the mind how to just be with it. And the mind and body was learning how to relax with it. So instead of me trying to find the solution to fix it, I thought I had to just live with it. So my 1 minute was to help me learn how to live with it. I didn't realize that that 1 minute was actually helping the body figure out how to let go of all that energy.
Well, this would have been helpful at 5:30 this afternoon when I was crying.
That's right.
It's like this knot that I'm trying to, years and years of habit mind and causes and conditions where I'm probably not as caught as I think I am, because I think I'm kind of addicted to these habits.
We are. Yes, you are. That's wisdom there. Yes, we are. That's why we need the November dates. We need the November months, because we're going to have to get disenchanted with some of these habits that we've been using and doing for 50, 60 years. There's no way we don't believe that that is the right way, because we've been doing it for so long. So not doing it is the wrong way. And so it takes a little bit to learn how to not do what we habitually do.
And also because that addiction and habit is very much me.
Yes.
I really identify with this particular thing as, and almost to the point, and this is not a healthy thing, that this is the only me.
Yes, that's right.
And
I hope you hear a couple of things here. One, you are seeing some stuff here, right? This is wisdom. You are seeing some stuff, and you can't just make it go away. But do not discount your seeing.
Mm.
So it's almost like the seeing is just, you need more information. That's what helps you stop picking it up, is you need more information. And to get more information, you got to be still and quiet with it, just as it is.
Because whenever you were talking, I was thinking, there are probably, everybody here tonight is probably got something in their mind and they want to go, could you just tell me how to do it?
I know. I tried that.
And it could, this thing that I have in my mind be what you're talking about?
Yeah.
You know, that's, I'm very, this was very helpful. Thank you for your wisdom.
Just think of it like this, Christy. You just threw the boomerang this afternoon, but it's coming back. You haven't lost your opportunity to practice with it. You've got many times where it's coming right back again. But
oh, it's been doing it for years. So
but every time you practice with it, not make it go away. You need to be willing to let it stay and be interested in what is the dynamic of this? What is the nuance of this? And that interest, as if people were going to come to you and Christy and say, how did you work with that? And you are like, yes, let me tell you all the nuances I've seen in it, right? Until you're willing to learn all about it, you don't really see it. So what you're seeing, it's like this. I used this example before, but I think it's a great example. I went to San Francisco to look at the African American Museum, and they had this exhibit of the diaspora from Africa all the way to Americas. And we went in and we're looking at these pictures, and they were like, okay, it didn't seem very like astonishing the way the reviews were saying. I'm like, okay, there's some black people there, some black people there. Okay, I see some black people there doing all these various things. And this woman came over to me and my friend and says, you're too close. You got to go outside and across the street to really get a view of it. So I go out, we go outside, across the street, we turn around, and I'm blown away. Because these little pictures had this entire landscape of the African diaspora. It was unbelievable. I don't even know if they still have that exhibit, but geez, that exhibit was so remarkable. And the clarity of seeing individual people walking and moving, and all these people, what were little bitty pictures of random stuff, turned into this gigantic picture of just gobs of people moving from one continent to another. It was fantastic. And so when you are in that tug of war with it, it's because you're too close. You don't know what's really going on. You can't really see it. So you got to be patient and like move back and get some more details, get some more information. And the more you get the information, the more you're going to understand what's exactly going on, why this thing keeps cycling through. You can understand it. And that understanding, the joy is what's going to get you to look at it. And then when we move into the tranquility and calm, that's what helps us to back up a little bit and just steady with it. And eventually we get to a place where we are no longer enchanted by it. We're like, oh yeah, there you go. I know what that is. That's okay. And then it will pass on its own.
Amen.
I know. Isn't that just fantastic? That is the world we live in. Jeez, I could go on for hours, but that is the world we live in. And it is just the practice, and it is just because we have been born in a time where the Buddha's wisdom or the Tathagata's wisdom exists in the world. And it's that easy. And yet, we still live our lives out of the grumbling nature of this much more habit energy of greed, hatred, and delusion. So you are in the realm of liberation. We just have to be willing to encourage each other to keep working with it. Keep working, keep working, keep working. That's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Will keep working.
That's right. Keep working, keep working, keep working. That's it.
I don't think it does sound like fun, though.
It's not fun, but you need to put some joy in it.
I would be happy to let go. So thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, great. Well, I'm very excited. Thank you all for being here. Oh, there's one more?
I did have another question.
Okay, let's go quick. I'll go quick.
I've noticed that I can get...
Oh, you gotta use the mic, though, so that the people online can hear you.
Hello. Hi, I'm Christina. Thank you so much, Tulare. So my question is around... I've noticed that in engaging with certain people, there are specific people I'm thinking of, that I kind of get wrapped up into these habits, and they do cause suffering for, or our interactions cause suffering for both of us.
Yep.
And so I've tried to, in seeing that, I've tried to distance myself, and I think that in distancing myself, I've been able to see things a little bit more clearly and understand what's causing the suffering and sort of what the pattern is. But I'm wondering, should I approach again and try to understand more, or what? I'm not sure if I'm sort of just trying to push away the.
I don't think you have
not,
to
maybe
actually,
not the suffering, but the difficulty. Yeah.
I don't think you actually have to approach them. I think you can just. Bring it to mind, and you can remember that moment
mm-hmm. and notice it. And you will begin to notice your pattern of either wanting to be right or thinking you're right or trying to get your way, but there is a greed, hatred, or delusion that's kind of pushing your energy. Not whether you're good or bad or right or wrong, it's just pushing your energy in that engagement. And you want to unhook yourself from that. So it may be, it's like my sister and I, it may be that the two of you or the, you know, you and this and other people are getting engaged because you're feeding off of each other. It's really okay. So just sitting there, recalling a moment where that happened will give you enough information to begin to see how do you get stuck in that. That's what you're trying to see. Or you're trying to see it with a relaxed body and everything's okay. And there's nobody right here, so let me just see what's the dynamic that goes on. And you just keep looking at that. Keep looking at that, and you'll see more and more and more. And then you might or might not actually have a struggle with them if you meet them. You see, whether you re-engage with them or not, you might not have the same kind of friction that you had before. If you keep just looking at it in your own mind to understand.
Good. Thank you.
And if you do happen to see them, yeah, all the better. You're just going to practice with it. Sometimes you're going to be okay and do good. And sometimes it's going to be ugly. Fall right back in that same old trap again. But both of them, whether you fall in the trap or you don't fall in the trap, both of them are practice. And you can learn something from both of them. All right, good.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, thank you so much. I appreciate your staying a little later. And I'll see you all next week for a little bit of discussion on this. Bye. Online. Bye.